from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. You, of course, can listen anywhere in the area on your radio, 92.9 FM, ESPN, 680 AM. But if you want to follow along anytime, anywhere, wherever you may be, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. You can stay up to date on all of the great content here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Even if you miss a segment, you can hit the rewind feature and you can go back and listen to that segment. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week is the director and head coach of Team Thad. You can follow him on Twitter on X at DreamBigHerd. Follow him on Instagram at I Am Coach Hurt, also at Team Thad Nation on all social medias. Coach Hurt, good day, sir.
Yes, sir, always.
What's good?
Hump day, you know.
Hump day.
Another day for sports, another great day to discuss sports.
We will do that. It is, of course, Wednesday, so that means it's buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit day. I'll explain the gimmick to Hurt. We'll talk some Grizzlies. We'll talk Tigers, both football and basketball. We'll get into maybe a little bit of NFL. Perhaps maybe I want to get his opinion on the Olympics. As we have not had opening ceremonies yet, but we have Olympic competition going on. So far, I've seen rugby and soccer. I don't know if there's more, but I've seen that. I've not seen point spreads one way or the other, so I've not bet on it. But maybe I'll have to dip my toe here as we get pretty late into the sports calendar, get ready for football season. David Cobb will join us as he does each and every Wednesday. We'll get his thoughts on the ongoings up at Big Ten Media Days. Also want to get his thoughts on teams most likely from the SEC, if he were power ranking it, how he would see the SEC's playoff candidates. We'll discuss that and more. We'll get into the list at 3:05. The Grizzlies have made a roster move. It's not maybe the one that was expected, but we'll tell you about that at 3:05. Want to get Hurd's thoughts on his Niners potentially trying to hire Bill Belichick. We've got CeeDee Lamb now officially holding out. Not holding in. He's actually holding out. We'll discuss that. And then also during hour number two, Hurd mentioned yesterday when we were talking about Jordan Love and his contract, he'd mentioned, I don't have him as a top 10 guy. Well, we got to find out who's in that top 10. Coach Hurd and I will discuss our NFL top 10 quarterbacks during the second hour. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But let's fire it up. Let's fire it up. Let's play a little buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit.
It's that time with Jeffrey and Company, where we either buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit on 92.9.
All right, Coach, here is the gimmick. Of course, everybody knows the very popular segments on just about any sports talk show, buy or sell. Well, I don't know if you remember during the pandemic when the online community was all about the GameStop stock. I think it was AMC, the movie theaters. And so it created this big old financial crisis that like took the internet by storm for 48 hours. So Mark and I were just joking around one day, instead of buy or sell, we should do buy, sell short, or go to Reddit. The idea being, I'm going to make a statement. If you agree with it, you want to buy it. If you kind of are like, you know what? I don't really feel too strongly one way or the other. Just go ahead and sell it. If you think that what I say is everyone's wrong, like people, like that would be a consensus opinion. Everybody's like, oh yeah, no, that's true. But you're like, I don't think that's true. Then you want to short it. Essentially just betting against it. Go to Reddit was a joke to give Mark a cop out at the time so they didn't have to answer tough questions. Now, I'm not going to leave you hanging. I'll read the statement. I'll let you go first, but I'm not going to pull a Calkins on you where I just make you answer just so that I don't have to talk about a tough opinion. All right, so let's start first with the Grizzlies, because I was thinking about this as we've been talking some Grizzlies throughout the week. Let's set aside last season, because it's just a lost season. The Ja with a 25-game suspension, you only get 9 games from him, all the injuries, wash it away. It happens, so be it. But the Grizzlies' next two seasons will be better than the previous two playoff seasons. So the two times that they were the 2 seed, so the year where they beat the T-Wolves and then lose to the Warriors in 6 and then lose to the Lakers in 6 as a 2 seed, the next 2 seasons will be better than those 2 seasons. Buy, sell short, or go to Reddit.
So they were the number 2 seed in the West?
So here's how you can kind of look at it. You kind of can go any direction. If you want to say, okay, I think they're going to win more regular season games, so therefore I can make a case. I think the way that I'm thinking about it is, do you think, buy, sell short, or go to Reddit, they will win more than one playoff series in the next 2 seasons?
Yeah, if you put it like that.
Let's do that one. That's a better one.
I'd buy that, because the regular season I was going to sell, because I don't think they... The only way they could be over 2 is 1, and the West is extremely tough right now, so I'm not sure there'll be a 2 seed. But I think no matter what the seed is, like the Mavericks showed us, I think they could get past the first round, go around deeper.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem with saying, if you're just talking about where they finish, well, that's relative. Because in their 2 seasons as a 2 seed, well, 1 year was a 56-win team, and the other year was a 50-win team. And while 50 wins I don't think would have been the fewest amount of wins for a 2 seed in a long time, but it was very much at the bottom tier. And so that one's kind of, because remember that was that year where like no one was really good except Denver, really in the West, at least, like no, everyone was just kind of like, just like we kept the, I felt like the whole year we kept doing the, like, who's good other than Denver, like that was kind of the big question. I think I'm gonna buy it, and here's the reason why I'm gonna buy it. I do think it's easy to kind of be prisoners of the moment. And I know that's maybe that doesn't happen so much locally with the Grizzlies, but I do think it happens very much nationally. And you start to believe the most recent thing that you saw is just the way that it's going to be. I even think about it in terms of last year's playoffs. When Denver beat the Lakers in 5, I felt pretty confident, all right, we're heading towards Boston and Denver. It took about 3 quarters of, it also included what the Timberwolves did to Phoenix. I mean, just absolutely punking them. Not only sweeping them, but like absolutely embarrassing them. And then the first like 3 quarters, the first half 3 quarters, you realized, oh, Denver's in for a fight with the T-Wolves. And we got to the point where it's like, all right, after the first 2 games, we're thinking, is Denver going to get swept? And then Denver wins all 3 in Minnesota, and we're thinking, well, that's the way it was. What the Heat did to the Mavericks in 06. It's like, yeah, they lost the first 2, then they swept them after that. Or what the Grizzlies did to the Clippers in 13? Yeah, I think it was 2013. So, or was that 15? No, that was 2015 maybe. But when the Grizzlies lost the first 2 in LA and then won the next 4. So you started thinking that, and then you got to game 7, and I just, like, yeah, the Timberwolves didn't blow them out by like 20 or whatnot. I just never really felt like Denver was going to get in that game. And so what I think's happened with the Grizzlies is because they've been out of sight, out of mind for so long, and we just, it feels like particularly in the NBA, there's this massive rush to be like, this guy's the future. I think people forget this is a very good basketball team. It's not a perfect basketball team, but when you have a combination of Ja, Jaren, and Dez, there's not a lot of three-man combos in the league that are as good as that. And I just think the Grizzlies are now at a spot where they're undervalued, but I also think that's a good thing. I don't think this team's a front-running team. I think this team needs to be the chaser. And I just think that we always do this move in the West of, like, we always think the landscape has changed to a given team. Well, I think it's now six straight Western Conference Finals have had new teams. And so I just think that we don't really factor in the West becomes a lot more topsy-turvy than the East does.
Oh, no, I definitely agree with you on that. That series was like a roller coaster. Oh, like
absolutely.
You said, I love Anthony Edwards. I don't know if I told you we got a personal relationship. So the way they did the Suns, I'm like, holy. And then when they win the first two against Denver, I'm not going to lie to you. You're talking about front runner and me, the love I have for him. I'm really thinking this kid about to do some stuff. I know a lot of people feel like the Jordan stuff was going too far.
I am with you. I love Ant.
Yeah.
But I just thought when everyone was doing the look at these numbers, he's Michael Jordan. I'm just like, oh, can we please?
Too early.
Like, pump
I think
the
some
brakes.
Of that they actually look alike, too. They was playing about the daddy stuff, and then they went deep into him. So with that, I will say this, though, Jeffrey. I figure if he would have went all the way to the championship, I would have started that, too, because that's how it was looking. You just sweep Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, three max players, and I think three Hall of Famers. The only one you have to think about is Bradley Beal and his health.
Yeah.
And that was the first time, I don't know how you feel about this, Jeffrey, where I felt like, you know how people always say the NBA is set up and this and that? I feel like it was scripted. Yeah. This was the first year I would say I could finally say the NBA is true, because Kevin Durant and them getting swept hurt them with money. LeBron James losing in the first round hurt them with – you get what I'm saying? Denver not making it as a national global team with hurt them with – you get what I mean? It would have been better storylines. You know, and now, so –
If the NBA were actually scripted, they would have LeBron in one conference, Steph in the other, and they'd meet every time.
Yeah.
That is a proven formula for printing money.
For sure. So when it went like that and you get Dallas against Boston for the championship, that's cool, but that's really not. So when they let, because usually then when you're young, even with the Grizzlies, I would get mad when they lose and like, oh, it's scripted. But no, Minnesota showed that, no, you actually can do it if you're good enough. Now, you got to dominate. If it's close, they might give it to the people who've been around, you know. And so I agree with you on that.
Yeah, because the thing that I thought was curious about the last playoffs, obviously, if you're going to be a fan of a small market team, you would prefer the league to be set up like it currently is, because it doesn't allow – now the format is, unless you just have a team like Boston that's just willing to say – we got these guys. Screw it. We're going to pay
luxury tax.
What? And it's not it's like the luxury tax times like 10. And then we're going to be willing to take the penalties that come with it. But for the most part, it's not just set up to where you can just have stars cluster again. And so I prefer that. And if you think about the playoffs, outside of a couple of first round matchups, I kind of had ideas of the way that the playoff series were going to go. But it was nice as just a fan of basketball to sit there and go, I don't know who's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, that happened in multiple series. And so I do prefer that. But I think the other thing that you started to realize is what was curious is you may not have known who was going to win the series, but it felt like you could determine in the first quarter, with the exception of the Lakers-Denver series, it felt like you could determine in the first quarter who was going to win the game. Like, it was these seven-game series where, like, maybe – one game was within 10 points. It was like each team took their turns winning by double figures.
Now, that's one thing I do hate about the playoffs. I don't like where a team can win by 30 this day and the next day they lose by 30. I don't. Now, that's what's confusing me, being a big basketball guy and these being professionals and locked in and focused in. Like, I still don't understand that. I don't know if – now, I get it, like, if you're Boston in the playoffs – everybody do want to win a championship on their home floor.
Sure.
if they can do that. So, you can have game five. We don't have – we'd rather not sweep you, my bad, game four. But that'd be killing me. Like, and it happens a lot in the NBA.
We saw it twice. The same thing happened with the Timberwolves and Mavs in the Western Conference Finals. And then we saw it in the finals. Like, it was like back-to-back series. It just happened in the inverse.
And then that happened with the Grizzlies and Timberwolves a couple years ago where, like – without Ja, the Grizzlies beat them by the biggest playoff margin.
You're thinking of the Warriors. So this is funny that you bring it up, because I was actually going to say
50 or something. They was up at one point without Ja, some crazy.
I put all of this on the Warriors, and I have no idea. Just like I have no idea if Kawhi really was patient zero for whether or not Kawhi was patient zero for load management. I have no idea if the Warriors are patient zero for the, all right, we'll pack it in tonight. But I feel like the Warriors are the poster child throughout their playoffs. Like, even when they were great, they kind of do the move of, we don't got it tonight. Like, everybody rest up. We'll go home. And I guess LeBron kind of did that, because game one was always like his feel-out game. But I never thought with LeBron it was like pack it in. I always thought he was trying to kind of figure out, all right, what are they trying? He was experimenting in game one, trying to figure out how he wanted to attack the rest of the way. But I blame the Warriors for that, because I'm with you. There's nothing more deflating, especially when you get past the first round, when we don't have overlapping games, and you realize, like, maybe there's certain nights where there's only one playoff game, and you realize in the third quarter it's 30 points. You're like, I'm just, like, wasting my time here. What am I doing? Like, I'm not learning anything. This isn't fun. This isn't exciting. Like, do I have to take a live line just to try and see if I can make this interesting? Like, I'm with you. It's deflating in terms of being a basketball fan.
Yeah, for sure. And I just don't get how you do it the next day. And the great thing about these playoffs, too, Jeffrey, I think the Mavericks was the underdog in maybe every one of them. I know you're more of a betting guy, but I feel like they were somewhat the underdog in every series. And
the only one I'm iffy on, I think they actually might have been favored against the Clippers. But it was like, it was essentially a toss-up. It was like, I think you're right.
The Clippers.
They were definitely underdogs against OKC. They were underdogs against Minnesota and then Boston, obviously.
For sure. And see, Boston, I knew once they made it there that Boston would win, because I felt like the only team that could match up with Boston was Denver, could beat them. And Minnesota, I feel, matched up somewhere good again. But I thought outside of that, because Kyrie and Luka, as good as they are, they're not athletic and stuff. And I just feel like Boston had too many athletic guys.
Yeah. You've probably experienced this. Since I call high school football games, you'll see this from time to time. It doesn't always happen. But when you get into the playoffs, there's – some years, there's like one year MUS was basically like a Cinderella. Like, they got hot and they beat a couple of teams they shouldn't have, and they get to the state title game. The state title game had a running clock. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes eventually the clock strikes midnight on Cinderella. And like, it inevitably happens, because when you don't get the best team, and it doesn't mean that team didn't earn their way there. Like, we're not playing these games on paper. We're not running simulations. It's sports. Oftentimes, though, same thing with the Heat 2 years ago. It wasn't like the Heat didn't deserve to be in the NBA Finals. They earned their way there. But they were not in the same class as Denver. And the same thing with the Mavs. They earned their way there, but they weren't in the same class.
Not at all. Not at all. And sometimes, you know this with sports, too. You've been around sports your whole life. Kind of like boxers make fights. Sometimes you can win out, but that's a bad matchup for you. You know what I mean? Because, like, that was a bad matchup for we said, if Minnesota and Denver would have made it, even though they beat them, that would have been a bad matchup for Boston. I think Denver would have went seven rounds. Seven games, I'm sorry.
A worse matchup. I don't know if it's bad, because I think Boston was better than everybody. I do think it would have been tougher.
You know what? I think, like, I love Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
But I think when things get tight. I think it would have been tighter. Like, Anthony Edwards, I think that would have been more difficult for them, a big athletic win. I think Denver actually would have beat them I think Minnesota would have made it tough because Dallas didn't really oppose enough pressure on them. Like, they let it get back close and blow it back. They could have swept them, really, you know, by 20. I think they want the win at Boston. But Boston never had a tight series. And when they get tight like Miami the year before, they do kind of – that's how Jaylen Brown got the MVP, because Tatum is a very talented individual player, but he does come up small at times in the playoff, but he don't get discounted for it because his team is so good that it don't show he didn't came up, you know, small a lot.
100% agree with your point about game pressure. It really never felt like, even when Miami this year, they stole game two because they hit whatever, like 25 threes, yeah, whatever it was. Like, of the surprising, like, double-digit losses by the favorite, that one at least made sense to me. It's like, okay, Miami just was in fuego. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's okay. You can write that off. The only problem I have with that is I think Denver, on paper, I agree with you. But Denver, in the current form that we saw in the playoffs, with Murray being at best banged up or inconsistent, and then no shows from Porter, if you tell me you're getting the best version of Porter and the best version of Murray, I'm totally with you. I just felt like at that point, Murray was legitimately hurt, playing injured at least. And Porter, like, I don't know if it's in his head. Obviously, he's got the family stuff that's going on. Like, he just was,
he was
awful. Sad. And so if that's the form they're getting, it's like, okay, I don't believe in that Denver team. But if they get their heads on straight, yes, I'm with you on that. But to me, I definitely think your overall point is right. We're starting to kind of enter the NCAA tournament era of the NBA playoffs, where it's less about quote unquote which team is better, but it's really about which team has the better matchup. Because even if we take Dallas, like, let's say you wanted to be the most pie in the sky optimist about Dallas, and let's say you went into the series believing Luka's the best player and Kyrie's the second best player. All right. I disagree, but I'll play it out with you. Like, the next eight guys were all
3 through 14 would have been with Boston.
Yes. And so it's like, I mean, there is always the leave room for X, like the great being a great, but it's like, man, that's not something I'd want to bet on.
No, exactly. I definitely don't think the only reason I brought up Denver and Minnesota, because Dallas was so dependent when it came to the finals. I think the stage was too big for anybody except Kyrie and Luka. And Kyrie didn't even show up half the games of the series.
The games in Boston, he was god-awful. And he can do the whole, oh, it's all good, it's all good. It's like, no, there's
no, it's not good. You didn't do your job tonight. And you, my boy, I love you. You killed Anthony Edwards in them, and you overachieved. But there are bigs, and Derrick Jones, which is a kid I watch, they didn't give anything. I know with Denver, you would have, you know, somebody would have had to hold you. Because, you know, Porzingis missed a couple games, too, in the finals. So if you would have
been, even when he was playing, it was kind of like, oh, that guy's not right.
So if you add, I think, Karl Towns and Rudy, or you add Joker, which is still, I mean, he's all world. You know, he can gain momentum at any time and go from, I didn't see him have a 8-point first half and end the game with 38, 16, and 13. And I'm not exaggerating. He done stuff like that.
I mean, look, all you have to do is look at it in these terms. Anthony Davis, two playoffs ago, everyone's thinking this is the best defensive big in the entire planet. And then he saw Jokic. And if Anthony Davis can't guard you, probably not a lot of people on the planet that can guard you.
And let's not go 2 years. This is what scared me, that I thought it was over for Minnesota. I watched two games where Greek Freak made Rudy look so bad. I was embarrassed for him, and it made me feel like how all the old heads, and I watched film, how Hakeem did David Robinson when he said this. I'm talking about he was doing up and under, shooting the jump shot. The hook shot.
If it was anyone other than Rudy Gobert, you would have felt sorry for him.
Exactly. And this was the defensive player of the year, and I think it embarrassed him to the point. And I went on the show that week with you guys, but I know that was the talk on every time I cut on TV, was like, this is the deep. They started saying, how are we going to judge the defensive player of the year now after he got embarrassed so bad? So when he was doing that, I did think that series was over. But somehow Minnesota came up with enough will and unk to still win that series. Yep.
All right, let's go to a different one. I think this one's a little more interesting. Anything less than a conference title for Tiger football will be a disappointment. Buy, sell short, or go to Reddit.
I'm not a big preseason guy, but because we are so hype about preseason, I don't want to put pressure on. I'm going to have to say buy.
I want to say I really do want to sell it, but then you have to think about, okay, how would it play out? And that's why I've got to buy it. I'm with you. I don't really like it. Preseason rankings are great for us. Gives us something to talk about, something to debate. Like, that's part of it. They're conversation starters. But the real problem is, if they don't win the conference title, it basically played out in one of two fashions. It either played out with you not even making the title game, or I guess three fashions. You not making the title game, you losing the title game on the road, you losing the title game at home. But where it really starts to, where you'll start to realize that it's disappointing is, I think if this team is in the playoff conversation for much of October and November, being the G5 rep, and then you get there and you fall short, I don't think there's anything that like makes that okay. Because for some of the big boys, it's like, all right, yeah, you fell short. Like when Tennessee 2 years ago, they get crushed by Georgia, and then they get embarrassed by South Carolina when Hendon Hooker tore his ACL. That team still went 10-2. They go to the Orange Bowl. They beat Clemson in the Orange Bowl. There's something to like make you feel better. Well, now in the league that you're in, it's not like there's, oh, well, at least we've got the Orange Bowl waiting on us. We got the Fiesta Bowl. That's not part of it. And so then you factor in how everyone's feeling and apprehensive about getting into a bigger league. I just feel like when you are predicted to win a league, and a league that's not all that talent rich, and you fall short, it just brings questions. And in the end, everyone's going to be doing like, what are we doing here? This is the same thing all over again.
I agree with you. I don't want to add pressure to the staff and the players, but I think from the fans in the city, like, they would kind of be crushed if they didn't win the conference, because it's like, that's our claim to fame, would be winning the conference. Like you say, that's our, we don't win it, it's not nothing that great, because this is not a year where we're just saying, win in the conference, win six games, you're in a bowl. Like, if we was in a tougher conference back when UCF was here, and Houston was here, and what was that, Cincinnati had, and those things. We were still in the top three some years. If we would have beat one of them, we would have been closer.
Yeah.
But we're still in the bowl. And for Tiger football, it ain't like basketball. We usually happy just to get to a bowl. No, I think with this conference, with the improvement of the recruits, with where we saying we want to be, that, and I hate putting pressure on them because I get pressure put on me a lot in my job, so I get it. I think they got to win the conference or bust, so that's why I'm buying. I think they must win the conference. They should win it from everything we have seen so far.
Another byproduct of the conference being what it is now is it takes away, like if we use that Tennessee example, yeah, they fall short of the playoff, they fall short of the SEC title, but there's still the Alabama game, and you can't take that away from people. And the problem with this schedule is, okay, if you don't win the conference title, that means you're probably like 8-4, 9-3, and you don't really have a win on your resume that's like, well, you know, we did at least have that day. Because there is a certain part with college football compared to the other sports where you can still have big wins that make a season worth it because there's so few games. I mean, what, are you going to sit there and go, that UAB game, the North Texas game? Like there's nothing that, like, the fan base cares about. I mean, I suppose in a universe, you go to Florida State and win, but it's like, you're asking me to believe that you go to Florida State and win, and then you're a 9-3 team? Like, that doesn't really balance out, like, unless you tell me your quarterback gets hurt. And then if your quarterback gets hurt, okay, that's, everyone gets it.
So I was just about to ask you who is the Big Nine conference game, yeah. And I thought about it was Florida State. This is where I got a differ at. Would you rather beat Florida State to win the current? I don't know, Coach. I think if you beat Florida State, Coach, I'm not. Me as a player and a coach, I don't know. Coach. I think the Florida State.
So you have to think about it in these terms. If I give you this toss-up.
Okay.
Because I think if you beat Florida State, if the toss-up is just beat Florida State or win the conference, that's not really the question. The question would be beat Florida State or go to the playoff.
That's too deep.
Correct. So there's
you think if they win the conference, they go to the playoffs?
As long as I think the other competition is probably going to be Liberty. And I think the way that Liberty got smoked in the Fiesta Bowl, people are just not going to they're not going to forget it. And then the Mountain West is kind of a league where it kind of eats itself. Memphis can easily lose to Florida State and still make the playoff. They cannot make the playoff. So that would be the toss-up. Would you rather beat Florida State on the road? I think it's week two or week three. I think it's week three. So there it is. Florida State on the road in September or make the playoff?
I mean, that's easy. It'll be make the playoffs. If you was to say, like, the conference, I would think about that because I'm just thinking about, like, when you're going to talk to recruits the next year and you competing against some of these bigger schools, I think that could be a bigger sell than even winning this conference that ain't as respected to some of the higher-level recruits like Antoine Hill and them. But I think if you're talking about playoff, it definitely will get you recruits and have something to have in your back. You made it to the playoffs. That make you look like, because don't 12 make it this year? So yeah. That make you look like, you know, elite 12 program at that point.
Well, and on top of that, you're getting all this exposure because ESPN's got the playoff. And so all ESPN's going to be doing is talking about playoff teams. So you're always going to be a part of the conversation. I think that's an interesting question, though. If you did beat Florida State or win the AAC title with no playoff, that starts to become a different equation because part of the winning the conference is the expectation if you win the league, that would lead to a playoff berth as well. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk some college football. We'll do it next with Cobb when he joins the program. Sticker Anderson, Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Cobb, I guess let's start here with the most recent thing that you've written. Is there anything dumber than a win percentage restriction in college football for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, if you're referencing the fact that Mike Leach is not in,
yeah.
And this week, in the past couple weeks, some pretty prominent coaches have voiced their displeasure with the fact that he was not on the ballot this year. Because, yeah, he felt like 0.04 percentage points shy of that 60% threshold. But it should be so much more than that. He impacted the game with the way he overhauled schematics. And then look at the schools where he coached. The fact that he was even in the neighborhood of 60% winning percentage at Texas Tech, Washington State, and Mississippi State, all that does is add to his legacy and serve as a testament to the caliber of coach that he was.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that's the whole deal. We have always inherently understood not all jobs are equal. This is not the NFL where systematically there's no reason why Green Bay can't be just as good as the New York Football Giants. Like, but in college football, we inherently accept there are better jobs than others. I don't know about Mississippi State, but I do know Washington State and Texas Tech as programs had overall losing records, and the man still came within basically, what, one win of being a 60% win coach?
Right, and then you could drop you or I into Alabama or Georgia or
we'd
Ohio
win nine.
State. We'd have a 60% winning percentage. We'd be on the Hall of Fame ballot, and Mike Leach isn't. So it's one of those technicalities that I'm sure this is going to get resolved. There's no way Mike Leach doesn't make the College Football Hall of Fame in relatively short order, because there's actually been exceptions in the past. He wouldn't be the first exception to this rule. There have been other coaches who fell short of that mark, and they made exceptions. Why they didn't do that right out of the gate for somebody like Mike Leach, I don't know. Maybe it was just an oversight.
Well, it's like the other thing is, okay, a Hall of Fame is also supposed to be a museum of history. Name someone who's had more influence on the game of college football like in the last 30 years in terms of what everyone's doing.
Yeah, it's hard to do because look at the tree. I think I saw something today. There's like 14 FBS head coaches on the Mike Leach coaching tree. Look at Lincoln Riley, who's manufactured multiple Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks with tenets of the scheme that he learned under Mike Leach at Texas Tech. And so that's part of the legacy, too, is the coaching tree. And there are few out there, alive or dead, that have a better coaching tree than Mike Leach.
Speaking of Lincoln Riley, did you see our boy Finebaum cooking this week on First Take?
Dang, yeah. Going in on him, man.
Not only that, he booked, not only did he go in on him, he booked him to get fired and then primetime to USC. I don't know if the world's ready for that. That would be must watch.
Yeah, it would be something. It would be something. The idea that, you know, maybe Deion Sanders could go to USC, have more NIL resources, do a little more in high school recruiting. It's an interesting thought.
Well, it's like the most Hollywood coach at the school that's just outside of Hollywood.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, even if Prime is at USC, USC football is still number five or number six in the Los Angeles sports hierarchy. I mean, there's still two NFL teams. There's still two.
Well, USC is probably bigger than the Chargers.
You really think so?
Yeah. The Chargers had to pay fans to get in. They couldn't sell out the Home Depot Center that holds 20,000 people when they first move.
Well, just wait till Jim Harbaugh gets it rolling out there.
Did you see our boy was cooking with gas? Well, what's the quote? He opened his day one of camp presser. Feels like New Year's Day. Feels like being born. It was like coming out of the womb. I will say, like, going back to the NFL, like, he is staying true to who he is. It's like, first off, Jim, quick follow-up. Do you actually remember that? I have no recollection of what it was like coming out of the womb. I don't even know, like, what my earliest memory is, but I'm pretty confident it's not before, like, two or three.
Jim Harbaugh strikes me as one of those people who would legitimately claim to remember being born.
He might remember you could talk me into, like, he remembers being conceived.
Oh, God. That's one thing I certainly don't want to remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's unreal. Okay, we got Big Ten Media Days going on. I feel like we're kind of, I know the Cover 3 boys are live at, what is it now, Lucas Oil. They're live at Lucas Oil. They've been doing a great job. It just kind of feels like collectively we're just kind of over Media Days.
To a certain extent, that's true, but I don't know. I kind of enjoyed this week because I actually learned things about programs watching these Media Days now because there's so many new players, and they at least get asked about the top two or three transfers that they brought in, and it's sort of a nice little refresher that, oh, yeah, Malik Murphy is now competing for the Duke starting quarterback job. You know, random stuff like that. And then there's a little bit of comedic relief. I don't know if you've seen the clip that's going around at the moment, but Deshaun Foster, the new UCLA coach, he gets up to the mic on the main podium at Lucas Oil and kind of looks like a deer in the headlights. And very clearly, this is his first rodeo, and it was a little bit cringeworthy. And so, you know, you get a few moments here and there that are at least good for some comedy.
Yeah, there was that exchange. The other thing I was thinking about, because Tim Murray and I were talking about this last week, and I saw Bill Conley actually wrote it up. So it's always nice to know that if two degenerates have the same thought, that when someone actually smart brings it up, it's interesting. All right, I'm going to do a little blind resume, getting you ready for college basketball season. You ready?
Okay.
Quarterback A, 66% completion rate, 13.8 yards per completion, a sack rate of 4.4%, a interception rate of 1.7%, 45 non-sack rushing yards, and a total QBR of 83.8. All right, that's QB1.
Mm-hmm.
QB2, 61% completion rate, 12.1 yards per completion, 4.3% sack rate, 2.8% interception rate. He does have over 410 more rushing yards, so 455 non-sack rushing yards, and a total QBR of 75.1. QBA is Kyle McCord. QBB is Will Howard. And I'm not someone that would stump and say, you know, Kyle McCord's a great player. But I did feel like there was a lot of scapegoating of Kyle McCord last year. And it's like, I just feel like I'm wondering, if the standard's going to be for Ohio State, they got to win a national title or get damn close. We sure Will Howard's the guy?
I think they've downgraded even further. Like, obviously, Kyle McCord was a downgrade from the legacy of Ohio State quarterbacks that have come through there under Ryan Day. I mean, it was just one prolific passer after another, oftentimes dual threat guys, too. And then Kyle McCord couldn't quite live up to the Heisman finalist standard. Yeah, and he becomes the scapegoat.
Kyle McCord was worse than C.J. Stroud. Yes, the guy that lit up the NFL as a rookie.
Yeah, and then you got Justin Fields behind him and JT Barrett, and the list goes on at Ohio State. So, yeah, it's kind of tough shoes to fill. The thing about Will Howard is he was probably going to get beat out at Kansas State. Like, if you listen to the narratives coming out of Manhattan, Kansas right now, it's that, hey, Avery Johnson was going to be our guy. Will Howard left because he knew he was probably going to lose his job. And now Ohio State ends up with the guy who was probably going to be the backup at K-State. I mean, that's a pretty tough look right now for Ohio State, because that's the one position that you have a little bit of question about, because they fortified everything else. They brought back a ton of players on that defense who could have turned pro. They obviously brought in Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins from the portal. But quarterback is the one position where you look at it and you're like, okay, I know you guys are trying to be Michigan 2.0, but I don't think Will Howard is quite on the J.J. McCarthy level. And as you lay out, he may not even be on the Kyle McCord level.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one argument I could make for him is Kyle McCord did get to throw to unbelievable weapons, and Will Howard did not. So that can kind of – and essentially what you're asking is we need Will Howard to be a little bit more of the running game, because that's when we – like, going back to your point, like, Ryan Day's had more success when guys can move a little bit. So Howard moves a little bit better. But, man, I don't know. Like, I'm just having this tough time of thinking that's the guy that's going to go and beat Georgia.
Well, I think there's also a narrative that, oh, well, once Will Howard gets under the tutelage of Chip Kelly, boy, he'll take a big jump forward. He'll be a more better down the field threat and a great quarterback now once he gets under Chip Kelly's tutelage. Well, Let's not pretend as though Colin Klein wasn't a pretty good offensive coordinator at Kansas State. I mean, he was good enough to where Texas A&M went out and poached him and has a pretty good reputation himself. And in this day and time, we've sort of seen the offensive game catch up to Chip Kelly. He's not the innovative, forward-thinking type of offensive coordinator that he was 15 years ago at Oregon. So I think there's a little bit of a misnomer there, too, that there could be some huge step forward because now Will Howard's finally going to get developed. I think he was developed pretty well at Kansas State.
Are you as – I understand from a roster perspective, Oregon and Ohio State are probably the two clear choices for the Big Ten. The one thing that I'm actually very curious about heading into the season, how do we think this travel stuff's going to go? Because, like, there's a lot of long road trips, and I'm just wondering if, like, this thing could get a little nuttier than we think.
Oh, it definitely could. I mean, after those two, and even with those two, with some of the trips they have to take, it's a bit of a free-for-all in the Big Ten. I mean, you assume Penn State and Michigan are going to be right there nipping at the heels of Ohio State and Oregon. But, you know, after that, it gets mushy real quick because we're talking about Iowa and Rutgers having two of the most favorable schedules in the league and to the extent that they could actually be upper third in the league standings. And so it could get weird. Look at Oregon, for example. Like, they got to go to Wisconsin. They got to go to Michigan. They got to go all over the country. And we're just assuming that Oregon's going to easily transition into the Big Ten and that Dylan Gabriel's going to be this seamless substitute for Bo Nix. But, I mean, there's a lot of assumptions there, and that's a big leap for a program that spent the entirety of its life, you know, primarily on the West Coast.
Okay, you just spurred a thought, because I don't know what I would pick. Would you rather have Dylan Gabriel or Bo Nix?
I think I'd rather have Bo Nix.
I think so too, but man, the thing about Bo is like. Bo was a master at putting up numbers, but, like, he was the king of, I'd look up and see the guy threw for 350, like, four scores, no picks, and the entire time, like, did he make a throw that I was impressed by? Like, that, I feel like that was my entire existence watching Bo at Oregon. But I also think that Gabriel's just, I don't know. Like, to me, like, that's, like, I don't know if I'd pull the trigger. I think you're right. I think I'd probably say Bo.
I mean, he was just so – Bo Nix was so mistake avoidant, I guess, last season. Like, he always had Oregon in the right look. He always made the right throw. And they unlocked something in him that was clearly never unlocked at Auburn. And it was a pretty incredible testament to that Oregon staff and Will Stein, their OC. So is there that next level for Dylan Gabriel at Oregon now? That's I don't know. I mean, he was with Josh Heupel at UCF. That's some pretty good quarterback development. He was with Jeff Lebby as the OC at Oklahoma. That's some pretty good quarterback development. Much better quarterback development than what Bo Nix had at Auburn. So the idea that Dylan Gabriel takes that next step, I think he's going to be great. I think he's absolutely good enough to get Oregon to the college football playoff. I don't think there's going to be some precipitous drop-off. But if I had to choose one or the other, I'm going to choose Bo Nix.
Okay, and then you also mentioned Rutgers, because I'm going to need you to explain this one to me. So Greg Schiano yesterday had this line. There's two great thieves in the world, the past and the future. So by that logic, if the past and the future are great thieves, what's the point of practicing or correcting things? Because to me it's like, okay, so I think what he's trying to say is it's all about today, but it's like, how about learning from mistakes? How about, like, having a game plan? Like, that was one of those ones where I was like, that's just Schiano. Like, that's Schiano being in a room thinking that he said something smart, and you're like, that is, like, something that would get cut from an emo album for a line in 2006.
Well, I also heard Greg Schiano say yesterday that he's got to get some of the younger guys on his defense reps this year.
No way!
They're going to graduate almost everybody off of this defense, and that their 2025 defense is going to maybe be looking a little bleak. So I heard that. So he's looking ahead too. I mean, but this is why Greg Schiano would never have worked in the SEC, because you can say dumb stuff when you're the coach at Rutgers and nobody will care. But when you say dumb stuff and you're the head coach at Tennessee or in the SEC, it's just going to get put under a microscope, much like every dumb thing that Butch Jones ever said got put under a microscope. And now he can say all the dumb stuff in the world that he wants to at Arkansas State, and nobody cares. So it's a perfect example there of why Greg Schiano is exactly where Greg Schiano needs to be.
We're talking with David Cobb here on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. All right, switching gears. I think we talked about it last week. We pretty much nailed that there wasn't going to be a whole lot from SEC Media Days, and you even specifically pointed out you thought the biggest story would be Nick Saban. It was. I think the perfect explanation of SEC Media Days last week was the Kiffin-Feinbaum exchange, which, by the way, I'm willing to put my life on, is a bit. That was going viral on Thursday, and it happened on Monday. Like, the fact that it was, like, recycled. All right, so this is kind of the question, though, that I'm more curious about. If you had to power rank the SEC teams from most to least confident, you know, let's say, like, your top six, seven teams that would actually make the playoff, how are you ranking it?
Well, Georgia and Texas, something's got to go terribly wrong for either of those schools to miss the playoffs. So, yeah, it starts with those two. Then, you know what, give me Ole Miss at three. I think what they've done to fortify the defensive line is pretty impressive. So give me the Rebs at three. I go Bama four. And then after that, it gets tough, but I would probably do LSU five. And then you get to six and seven, it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of thought that Missouri could be that team. But I'll go with the homer pick here and put Tennessee at six because, I mean, I really do think that if Nico is as good as advertised, he could be that sort of a difference maker for them. So that's it for me. It's Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU, Tennessee. I mean, that would be my top six.
Are we sleeping on Alabama?
I have legitimate concerns about their secondary. I mean, you lost two first-round draft picks at corner. You lose your elite safety, Caleb Downs, who transfers to Ohio State. So, no, I don't know. I mean, there's some legitimate question there. And now we're talking about Jalen Milroe getting familiar and developing chemistry with an entirely new group of receivers that, by the way, they might end up starting and relying heavily on a true freshman who reclassified. I mean, that's scary when you look at some of the perimeter skill position players that they're going to be relying on. Actually, on the offensive and defensive lines, I think they're going to be pretty solid. I think they're going to be fine. And I think Jalen Milroe will even be a better quarterback under Kalen DeBoer. But I do have concerns about their secondary and their receivers.
I'm just a little worried about living in a universe where we're giving Ole Miss the benefit of the doubt, and we're skeptical in Alabama.
I know, but you gotta.
I mean, I'm the guy that preaches. Listen, anything that happened pre-2020, like, it's just a different day and age, and I do fundamentally acknowledge that. But it's like that's still taking some getting used to.
Well, this is the year where Ole Miss has pushed in all the chips, and they may have so much NIL tied up in this roster that their next couple of rosters aren't nearly as good. Because there's just not enough resources left from the donors and from the boosters to pay players at the rate that they're going to be paying this year's roster. And so in some respect, it almost feels like an NBA general manager pushing in all the chips and doing what they got to do to assemble the star power this year, knowing that they're going to have some bad salaries on the books, so to speak, in the years to come. It's not a perfect analogy, but it kind of feels to me as though that's what Ole Miss has done. And then
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.